Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is on assignment. Welcome to our list of answers to hydroplate theory objections. So far in this series, we have aired four programs. In the first one, we responded to criticisms from three well-known creationists, Danny Faulkner, Don Patton, and John Baumgartner. And those responses had to do with the origin of limestone, the initial 360-day year, and whether or not if you compress granite, you can get voltage. Related to that last topic, we did a second show, an interview with a California high-tech company, QuakeFinder, one of their officials, Tom Blair, on electromagnetic quake forecasting. So we're doing these shows in order to take objections to a flood model, which is basically the fountains of the great deep, that the water for the global flood came from below the crust when the crust cracked in what erupted the fountains of the great deep. That model, proposed by Genesis, Moses in the Bible, but also then worked out scientifically by Dr. Walt Brown, over the years, objections have been raised, and so we did a third program with a PhD in nuclear engineering, Dr. Josh Spencer, addressing objections to Walt Brown's theory on the origin of Earth's radioactivity, and also a second show with Dr. Spencer on various objections to the hydroplate theory from different creationists, for example, the false notion of Pangaea and the fit of the continents, and an objection that the hydroplate theory can't explain the Appalachian mountain chain, and so on. So now, today, what an honor, we have a special guest to discuss yet another objection that's been around for about a quarter of a century to Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, and it's an objection from geophysicist Dr. John Baumgartner. So to help us talk through this, welcome back to Real Science Radio, Kevin Lee. Hello, Kevin.
Great to be with you, Bob. It's a great topic. In fact, in your intro, I was thinking about John Baumgartner saying that there's no way the crust can create electrical voltage to go along with Dr. Brown's radioactivity chapter. And here you and I, were aware that just a few weeks ago when New Zealand had that recent earthquake, there was mysterious green and blue flashes appearing as New Zealand earthquake struck. Again, another scientific evidence that Dr. Brown's right, and John Baumgartner say things can't happen that are happening.
That they are happening. In fact, these earthquake lights are being documented increasingly around the world, and I think geology, mainstream geology, is accepting them and just trying to figure it all out.
Yes.
So now we have a really interesting topic, because way back in the early 1990s, Dr. John Baumgartner, who is a famous geologist, young earth creationist, he made an objection to Dr. Walt Brown's hydroplate theory, Walt's flood model. The audience might have a difficult time understanding this. You and I will have to do a great job. Could you first lay out what Walt claimed about the thickness of the initial crust as God created the earth, and then the objection that John Baumgartner raised?
Yes, Walt assumed that the original thickness of the crust was 10 kilometers in thickness from the bottom where it sat on the mantle, actually the water that was separating the mantle from the crust, and the top of the crust was 10 kilometers thick, became 30 kilometers thick as a result of his theory of how things move. And what John Baumgartner said, actually the quote, is, "One glaring problem with this idea is the lack of any conceivable mechanism for transforming that almost uniform distribution of continental crust covering the entire Earth into the present distribution of continental crust. So Walt says his 10-kilometer thick crust became 30 kilometers during his compression event. John Baumgartner says there's no way that could have happened because there's not enough room between the two ocean ridges for the crust to thicken to that thickness from a 10-kilometer starting point.
I've heard you use an analogy of a yardstick that folds. We've all seen those, and you fold it up. Could you explain that analogy?
Yeah, the easiest way to do it is if I have a yardstick that folds up to 1 foot, and I'm standing in a room that's just a foot and a half wide, there's no way I can fold out that yardstick between two walls that are a foot and a half wide because it's not big enough. That's John's contention against Dr. Brown's theory. And it's a legitimate complaint.
Yeah, right. And it pointed to a problem that was recognized. Now, I'd like to maybe restate that in my own words, make sure I understand.
Right.
And then we'll talk about why Walt originally said that the crust may have been 10 kilometers thick. Okay, so if the crust of the Earth is 10 kilometers thick when God created, and geologists in the 1900s are looking at seismographic data, and they're saying, hey, it looks like the crust of the Earth is maybe 30 miles thick, deep,
right,
then there's a geometry problem. How do you get Walt's thinner crust, even if you compress it, there's just not enough material to make it 30 miles deep. And so that's the accusation, that's the objection. And over the intervening years, there has been so much science that comes to bear on this issue. But let me first ask you, why is it that Walt, how did he come to the estimate of 10 kilometers deep? Because today, he believes that the crust was much thicker when God created it. But why did he initially say 10 kilometers?
In the early days of trying to put all the pieces of the puzzle together, one thing he was looking at is the amount of sediments that are on the Earth. And he theorized that the sediments came from the eroded crustal mass as the crack widened. And the crack became 800 miles wide.
In other words,
400
the crack,
on each side of the crack.
The crack around the whole Earth, which the mid-oceanic ridge today is a scar left over from that initial crack when the crust of the Earth cracked. And that's over
correct.
40...
So now you have 44,000 miles long by 800 miles wide, 400 on each side of the crack.
Kevin, as the water's coming up, the crack is eroding. It's getting wider and wider. And so all that eroded rock had to go somewhere. So go ahead, take it further for us.
And so that eroded rock, which again is 44,000 times 800 miles times 10 kilometers originally, that eroded rock is becoming the average 1 mile thickness of the sedimentary rock on planet Earth's continents.
Okay.
And so Walt was saying, well, that's how much debris would have been created if the crust was 10 kilometers thick. So there was a scientific reason for him picking 10 kilometers.
Okay. And when Walt made that initial estimate, and then the objections came in pretty readily, well, the crust today, it appears that it's much thicker than could be explained by the hydroplate theory. There are a couple factors going on. One is that the seismographic data has become increasingly refined in the last 25 years. And so there's increasing confidence today, whereas in the early days of the hydroplate theory, Walt was still waiting for a lot more data to come in to be confident about the current thickness of the crust. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And then there's another factor, and I think this is true of countless theories, scientific theories. When a theory is first introduced, even if it's a valid theory, it turns out to be right, there are often tensions with the theory when you compare it to the facts, the data. And let me give an example. They used to claim that the sun orbited around the Earth, geocentrism. Copernicus, long time ago, said that, no, the Earth and the planets revolve around the sun, heliocentrism. Well, when he made that statement, proposed that model, It turns out that the old way of thinking did a better job of predicting where the planets would be. The old epicycles, it was a rather accurate system of predicting where the planets would be. It did a better job than Copernicus's heliocentrism. Then you come to Isaac Newton and Kepler, and they did a much better job with Kepler's laws of planetary motions, and we orbit in an ellipse. They did a much better job now than the epicycles ever could have dreamed of doing. But it wasn't until the 1900s that Mercury's orbit was finally explained, because Kepler did a great job at explaining the bulk of Mercury's orbit, but it was just a bit off from his calculations, and we needed relativity to make the final adjustment. So when a theory is proposed, even if it's right, it might take time to assess how the theory relates to a growing body of evidence of the data.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Walt Brown is a pioneer in the flood science in a way that no one else was before him. So it takes some time for us to understand Earth's origins and the effects on Earth as a result of a global cataclysmic flood.
So at one point, Walt Brown then, in releasing another edition of his book, currently you could purchase the 8th edition. It's hardcover, full color, a gorgeous book and a fabulous science text for homeschoolers and anyone who loves science. Well, he released an edition of his text in the beginning, and he did two things. He increased the thickness of the initial crust to 10 miles from 10 kilometers, and he also included a chapter on the origin of comets and asteroids. And this was extremely significant, a major development in the theory, because now the fountains of the great deep, Walt was proposing to the world that they were so powerful that the debris that was launched up through this crack reached escape velocity. It had enough energy behind it so that some of the debris left Earth's orbit, impacted the moon, beat up the moon, especially what is today the near side, and it was the debris that eventually formed the asteroids and comets of our solar system.
That's correct. Not everything that was ejected through the crack went into space to become asteroids, comets, and trans-Neptunian objects, because as you and I just discussed, a lot of it didn't have that velocity, and it came raining back down onto Earth along with the rain to create the sedimentary layers that are on the Earth today.
Mm-hmm. So some percentage of it left Earth's gravity, and the rest of it is still here on our planet. And so when Walt had the insight to realize that all this dangerous material orbiting the sun in our solar system, and I say dangerous because every now and then a meteorite or a chunk of something comes back and it does damage to the surface of the Earth, to forests, plants, animals, and potentially people. Creationists believe that when God made the Earth, everything was perfect. So those dangerous elements would not have been in a perfect creation, but as a result of the fountains, the debris from the fountains of the great deep, now you take all the mass of the asteroid belt and the comets that are known and even those that are not known, and now the crust of the Earth needs to be thicker in order to account for all that additional debris.
Yes, that's why Dr. Brown went from 10 kilometers to 10 miles. John Baumgartner thinks that he changed it to 10 miles because of his earlier objections to 10 kilometers and was just changing it to 10 miles because of John, which is not true.
Well,
talking to Dr. Brown, it was because Dr. Brown realized that the evidence, the scientific evidence of everything we know about comets, asteroids, was that they had their origin of the debris that was ejected, and then that debris went on to come together into comets and asteroids.
Yes, and we have covered that topic on a Real Science Radio show called The Origin of Comets, and yes, we had a fabulous guest for that show. It was a pastor with a background in nuclear physics named Pastor Kevin Lee. So, Kevin, thank you for that show, and we did some other awesome shows with you. But then we also link directly to Walt's chapters on these topics so people could see the powerful evidence for the claim that asteroids and comets have come from the Earth. So that brought Walt's calculation for the thickness of the crust as God created it to 10 miles. But it's correct, not at 10 miles today. Walt, again, now has increased his estimate for the initial thickness of the Earth's crust. Why did he do that?
And it's important to realize that for Walt to change from 10 kilometer to 10 miles did not do away with John's original argument. That's just really a relatively small change. So John's argument continued,
yes,
through the flood science review,
right,
that he had with In Jesus' Name Productions and Joe Bardwell, and he called Walt's continuing adherence to 10 miles as being without a credible answer to these crucial questions. Hydroplate theory is dead in the water. He considered it a fatal flaw to the hydroplate theory. Well, Walt then increased it to 60 miles, not because of the critiques of John and others, but because he now realized the evidence that was continuing to come from space science fields that the trans-Neptunian objects, meaning orbiting bodies, you know, in our solar system, orbiting bodies that are beyond the orbit of Neptune, meaning trans-Neptunian objects, the evidence that was piling in showed that they also had their origin from the debris that was ejected during the flood of Noah.
Kevin, when people are listening, if they haven't studied Walt's theory, they might think, well, these ideas, how could it possibly be? Well, Dr. Brown has published predictions all along. And the predictions, when you get the insight of his model of how God created the Earth and how the global flood happened, then that leads to predictions of what else we're likely to discover. And before I mention about the TNOs, let me back up to the comets. Over the last couple years, you know, the most extraordinary accomplishment when the European Space Agency, they landed a craft on the surface of a comet, Comet 67P. Well, one of Walt Brown's predictions was that the debris that left the Earth makes up comets, and so comets would be made up of rounded boulders. And the photos that were taken are now iconic. The first photos close up of the surface of a comet, and they have what appears to be millions of boulders up to 10 feet in diameter that are rounded. And the astronomers laughed about them and they called them dinosaur eggs. I mean, what are these millions of dinosaur eggs? Actually, they were just joking, but rounded boulders is not something that you would expect would be formed out in space. And so that's one of many predictions that Walt Brown's model has made that have been confirmed. When it gets to the TNOs, everything out beyond Neptune, which includes Pluto and its moon Charon, and the thousands or millions of TNOs, a paper was published this year in a prestigious journal, the Monthly Notices of the Royal Astronomical Society, and it argues that the TNOs, they have the most astounding orbital characteristics that are just shocking to astronomers. And this paper explains that if they had an origin in the recent past from the inner solar system, where the Earth is, then the orbital parameters of the TNOs are explained. And just this week, there's breaking news. There is in pre-publication at one of the world's most prestigious journals, Astrophysical Journal, that a large TNO, in fact, it's part of a group of TNOs, they're orbiting the sun retrograde. They're going backwards. And that is such a problem, one of countless problems for the nebular hypothesis that a leading NASA scientist has said, look, our theory is in ruins because of all the discoveries that contradict the theory. And so here is more evidence just making the science news this week about this upcoming paper that the TNOs are not explained by secular origin stories, but in fact will be beautifully explained by the fountains of the great deep.
Yeah, I'm reading an August 13th article that I think was one of the first to come out about this. And not only are they retrograde, not only are they going the wrong way, but they're inclined at a 110-degree angle. And reading from this paper, it says it suggests that there's more going on in our outer solar system than we're fully aware of. And they're saying we can't figure out, we can't have an explanation for this. It's perfectly explained by the hydroplate theory premise that trans-Neptunian objects were formed by the debris ejected from Earth scattered throughout the solar system, and that some of these TNOs being retrograde is not surprising to the hydroplate theory advocates.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. We share emails back and forth, Kevin. You, Dr. Walt Brown, Brian Nichols, Jane Albright, and so many others, weekly, new discoveries, and we celebrate them because they're understandable from the Fountains of the Great Deep Global Flood model of Dr. Walt Brown. So it's just all thrilling. Now, Dr. Brown could have initially, when the first objections came in, even before those objections, he could have said, okay, the crust was, say, 30 miles thick. But the problem was then he couldn't account for the debris that was eroded away by the crack that circled the Earth. And so there were scientific data that were constraining the model. And in one direction, it was a strong constraint. And in the other direction, it was a problem that waited for a future solution. So I think that's what scientists do. They propose a model, and over time, we get more and more data, and we see if the model is explaining the data or if the additional information is falsifying the model.
Exactly. Walt Brown could have. This is what makes me so appreciate his work, is he could have just said, okay, the pre-flood crust was 3 miles, and made John Baumgartner's argument go away. Hmm. But he knew that creates a scientific problem, so he didn't change it just for John Baumgartner. He was waiting for future data. And, you know, John Baumgartner, when he runs into the dozens of problems associated with catastrophic plate tectonics, he creates a new fairy tale or invokes a miracle. Walt Brown didn't want to make a fairy tale, and he didn't want to invoke a miracle. He was waiting for data. So when trans-Neptunian objects became obviously by the evidence, the scientific evidence, supported by the idea they were originated from the ejection, Walt increased the thickness of the crust to now make John Baumgartner's original argument completely disappear based on scientific evidence, not invoking miracles or just doing it to make his argument go away.
Yes. And I hope the audience grasped the significance of Walt's predictions. When he predicts, based on his flood model, what we're going to find on comets. And then also, of course, the constituent elements of meteorites and asteroids, and that the TNOs would be found to have an inner solar system origin in the recent past. These are extraordinary predictions that are being confirmed by the world's leading scientists and science institutions. So
the thing I love most about the space sciences, and just like that article that you were telling us about that was published by the Royal Sciences, it's just gravity and physics. Mm. See, it's not like looking at a geological column and having people pontificate and debate about it. These orbiting bodies are governed by laws of physics and the theory and strength of gravity. Mm. So when that professor of the Air Force Academy wrote that article and said that everything about these 12, 13 strange TNOs that are extreme TNOs that all have an argument of the perihelion that are very nearly the same, showing that they were at one time in the plane of the solar system that got their gravity boost. Nobody can argue with it. It's science. Mm. Now, how were they in the inner solar system at one time?
Right.
That can be debated. They're trying to find another way by this Planet X explaining them.
Right.
But that's going to be a dead end, according to Dr. Brown's prediction.
And Planet X is not going to help explain the retrograde TNOs.
Nope. Yep.
And so
that's what this article says. That's what this recent article says, is that Well, because of these other weird TNOs that we can't explain, they came up with Planet X, but Planet X won't explain these new ones that are retrograde at 110 degrees.
Right, but the hydroplate theory will explain them. So
has explained them. Has already explained them.
Yeah, that's just awesome. So now I'd like to get to a second aspect of Dr. Baumgartner's geometry objection, and it has to do with the Earth's crust in the Pacific. But before that, just quickly, I'd like to invite the audience to look at a list of Bible verses. We have a spreadsheet on the internet, and it shows all the Bible verses on the flood that are uniquely supportive of one flood model or another. For example, there's a flood model that is the vapor canopy theory that now has been rejected by all the major creation organizations. And so there is a Bible verse, actually there are two, that the vapor canopy theory folks say these two verses seem to support our model. We put three columns for the hydroplate theory, the vapor canopy theory, and catastrophic plate tectonics. And we list all the Bible verses, about 20, over 20 of them. And the hydroplate theory has over 20 check marks, where these verses seem to uniquely support the claims of the hydroplate theory. The vapor canopy theory, two verses could be taken to support that model. Catastrophic plate tectonics, there are zero check marks. There are no verses that seem to uniquely support catastrophic plate tectonics, which is a miraculously sped up version of secular plate tectonics. And so, Kevin, I think it's important at this point to recognize the difference between playing offense and playing defense, right? Walt Brown makes that analogy. When people bring objections to the hydroplate theory, then the supporters like you and I, we need to defend the model, and we do. But then there's playing offense, where we look at hundreds of discoveries that are explained by the Fountains of the Great Deep model, hundreds, and dozens of Bible verses that are directly supportive of the hydroplate theory. So that's when we play offense. We say, look at all the biblical evidence and look at all the scientific evidence for the hydroplate theory. Then there are the objections, and that's when we're playing defense. And when you're on offense, there's nothing that comes close to the Fountains of the Great Deep and their explanatory power.
I'd even take it a step further and say that there are zero Bible verses that are in contradiction of the tenets of the hydroplate theory.
Oh, I do agree with that. I mean, the only two verses that you could argue for the vapor canopy theory, they have to do with the windows of heaven, you know, and the windows of heaven are explained by the hydroplate theory because the debris went up and fell back down on the earth. But we're giving them the benefit of the doubt. We're giving them two verses and saying, okay, you could claim that they support your model, but catastrophic plate tectonics has zero. There's literally zero biblical material that uniquely supports catastrophic plate tectonics.
And it completely contradicts the opening verses of the flood of Noah. And one day, all the fountains of the great deep were burst up, and the windows of heaven came down. It rained 40 days and 40 nights. And as you have made clear in your previous radio interviews and the emails you and I have exchanged, is the CPT people, the catastrophic plate tectonic people, can't to this day in public audiences clearly explain where the water came from and where it went.
Mm, yes. Absolutely true. We've seen it just recently at Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. A very experienced creation speaker was asked, where did the water go to? And he had a very hard time answering the question. And for awkwardness sake, I was glad he wasn't asked, where did the water come from? Because the CPT proponents, they have a very difficult time answering those two most basic questions that the hydroplate theory answers immediately. Let me give a link to those verses. If someone goes to rsr.org/flood verses, that's it, rsr.org/flood verses. We always put hyphens between words on our websites for domain names. for URLs, the path to find a page. So rsr.org/flood-verses, you will find that spreadsheet that I mentioned that absolutely is stunning. And there's another just like it, and it's right there at that same link. And it's the physical features on the Earth and in the solar system that require an explanation. Things that are no longer perfect, that resulted from judgment, and which of the flood models explain all these physical features. And that's another one, Kevin, where the check marks are all under the hydroplate theory model and not a single check mark under the vapor canopy or CPT.
And I'd even say CPT, as you and I know, and although they are embarrassed by it and try and talk their way around it, it requires several miracles to be initiated and to deal with all the different technical problems that they have with what they discover on Earth. But I would even say in this conversation, I've been thinking, there's actually a miracle that's impossible to happen that they would like to invoke. And that is the miracle that their theory can be right, even though it completely conflicts with the Bible.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, that's
And see, that's the biggest miracle they need, which they can't have because God does not contradict his word.
Yeah, what a great point. And in our video of the global flood, we have a full-length two-hour video, and then we have a 40-minute excerpts online. And we show the miracles that the catastrophic plate tectonics model claims. They allege that all these different miracles, and we document each one and where they published their claims that these miracles had to take place for their model to be true, and they're miracles of convenience. When the Bible implies a miracle, then sure, you could say, we think a miracle happened here because the Bible implies it. When the Bible states a miracle, then you could be certain the miracle happened. But as scientists, you don't just get to make up miracles at every point where your model would fail. That's not a valid way of working and understanding the world that we live in. Kevin, we're out of time for this, and it's a perfect point because we're getting to where John Baumgartner then also made a related argument about the crust of the Earth that's missing in the Pacific and Walt Brown's explanation for that. So would you be able to join me, and we'll break this into two shows. We'll do another show on that part of his criticism.
I'd love to do that. I'd encourage the listeners also to go to Jane Albright's four-part series on these issues because she provides other information and figures that can help out.
Yes. So, and we interviewed Jane Albright. It's rsr.org/Albright, A-L-B-R-I-G-H-T. And what a great series she wrote, and the interviews were fun also. So, all right, Kevin.
She wrote not a great theory. She wrote a great paper explaining the different views over the issues we've been talking about today.
Yes. All right. So thank you very much, Kevin. And until next week, look forward to you joining us again. And this is Bob Enyart for Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the hand.